ప్రియస్తం అవేశ్యమం ఆత్మని సంతమేకం సవేషు భూతేశ్వరియాజ్ఞనిశం యజస్వ యోగేన చ కామహేంద్రం.
And worship me. Again, repeat after me. It does not matter that you are in the material world. You should always continuously hear the instructions and messages given by me, and always be absorbed in thought of me. For I am the super soul, existing in the core of everyone's heart. Therefore, give up fruitive activities and worship me. Purport. When a devotee becomes materially very opulent, one should not think that he is enjoying the results of his fruitive activities. Devotee in his material world uses all material opulences for the service of the Lord, because he is planning how to serve the Lord with these opulences, as advised by the Lord Himself. Whatever material opulence is within his possession, he engages to expand the glories and service of the Lord. A devotee never performs any fruitive or ritualistic ceremony to enjoy the results of such karma. Rather, a devotee knows that karmakanda is meant for the less intelligent man. Narottam Das Thakur says in his Prema Bhakti Chandrika, karmakanda, jnanakanda, kevala vishera bandha. Both karmakanda and jnanakanda, fruitive activities and speculation about the Supreme Lord, are like pots of poison. One who is attracted to karmakanda and jnanakanda spoils his existence as a human being. Therefore, a devotee is never interested in karmakanda or jnanakanda, but is simply interested in favorable service to the Lord, anukuyena krishnano shilanam, or cultivation of spiritual activities and devotional service. Oma gyanate mirandasya janandana sabakaya chakshu unnuni tamina tasmai shri guru namaha ukam karoti vachanam bhangam mangayati giri bhakti patamaha mande shri guru namaha. So, after Prahlad has approached the Lord, Lord Nrisimhadev has responded in these two verses, expressing how a devotee never desires any kind of material opulences, either in this life or in the next life. And the verse, I guess it was done on Sunday, he says that nonetheless I already do enjoy the opulences of the demons in this material world, acting as their king until the end of the duration of time. Still we see in this prayer response by Lord Nrisimhadev that he's giving an instruction to Prahlad Maharaj to, he's ordering him to enjoy opulences. In this verse today, he's explaining that it doesn't matter if you stay in the material world and enjoy these opulences. But if you simply continue always hearing the instructions and messages given by me, always be absorbed in thought of me, and therefore he says, I am the super soul, because I am the super soul existing in the core of everyone's heart. So, a devotee, under certain circumstances, certainly may accept opulence. And Prabhupada explains in his purport that when a devotee becomes opulent, one shouldn't think that he's enjoying the results of his fruitive activities. Why? Because a devotee, of course he's speaking about a devotee such as like Prahlad Maharaj, or the example in the Bhagavatam, a devotee like Sudama Brahma, many examples of devotees who lived in opulence in Pundarika Vidyaniti. We can describe in detail how Pundarika Vidyaniti also appeared to be like a very, very materialistic person, because he had so much opulence, surrounded by opulence. Yet Pundarika Vidyaniti and the opulence obtained by Sudama Brahman, and here, is described here, as Pralhad Maharaj is being requested also to become the king, to take over the administration that Hiranyakashipu had previously held. And the Lord wanted Pralhad Maharaj to continue the administration as the king and to live in opulence, accept this opulence. So it's not by fruitive activity that such a devotee may have that opulence, but sometimes by the order of the Lord and by the arrangement of the Lord actually gives opulence to his devotee. Although it's described in the Bhagavatam that there are two types of renounced devotees. There's one type of renounced devotee. There's a devotee who's completely inimical towards opulence. It's the very thought of opulence. Not only does it not enter his mind, but he's very inimical towards it. He refuses under any condition, under any circumstances, to accept such opulence. Described as another type of renounced devotee who's indifferent to it. He's neither averse to it, is certainly not attached to it. It's like the example that is given of Sudama Brahman. Sudama Brahman, previous to his having approached the Supreme Lord, he was completely averse to enjoying opulence and sense gratification. That he was thinking in that way. But when he approached the Supreme Lord because of his, he had two reasons for approaching the Lord. One was that he wanted to see the Lord. He wanted the opportunity to come in the association and to see his worshipful Lord. And the other was because of his chaste and devoted wife. It was her request to go and to approach the Lord. But when Sudama Brahman approached the Lord, in his heart there was nothing there for asking for these things, for these opulences. In fact, there was no trace of it. And the Lord, being omniscient, immediately understood when Sudama Brahman came to him that there was no trace of even asking for these things within Sudama Brahman's heart. The only meditation that he had was his desire to see the Lord. When he appeared before the Supreme Lord, the Lord, understanding his heart, he immediately began to think that actually I should give this devotee, Sudama Brahman, opulence which is even greater than the demigods. Because he's not coming to me. Anything, there's nothing in his heart. He's not coming to me for anything, for some material motivation. Just as is explained here, that the devotee knows that karmakanda is meant for less intelligent man. Karmakanda means that desire, fruitive desire is there within the heart. The devotee worships the Lord or performs some types of fruitive action, a fruitive activity or fruitive sacrifice, because his meditation is the fruit. So this is his purpose, this is his motivation. There's something at the end which is motivating him to approach the Lord. But that end was not actually in the mind or in the heart of Sudama Brahman. So although he had previously been averse to enjoying, now at this particular point Sudama Brahman still was indifferent. And even when he approached the Lord, he never even asked, and the Lord actually never even said anything to him also about giving it to him. He was actually, when Sudama Brahman left, he was thinking, the Lord is very kind. I've come before him. I'm thinking I come before him asking him for him, in my heart asking for something, but I never even asked him, and neither did he even say anything to me about it. He didn't give me the well, and he was feeling wonderful, happy, that the Lord didn't give me well. But he was satisfied that I simply had the opportunity to see my worshipful Lord, and he was so satisfied with his heart in that. So, because Krishna understands the attitude of the devotee, when he sees that the devotional service, when the attitude is there of devotional service, if the devotee is indifferent to material opulence, the Lord may give some opulence to his devotee. He may actually request his devotee to accept that opulence. And the devotee who accepts that opulence by the arrangement of the Lord, just as when Siddham Brahman returned back expecting to see the same impoverished condition that he was living in before, he was surprised to see the opulence. Is it really that difficult for you to stay awake? This is so I've never seen such an intense struggle even while standing. Maybe if you hold your arms up. Is this a daily ritual? Anyways, he accepted the arrangement of the Lord. But he always described that he accepted opulence, but always within his heart, he was never thinking of enjoying that opulence. He just accepted it because the Lord had given it to him. And it was obvious, it was clear to him that this opulence was achieved by the arrangement of the Supreme Lord. In fact, even when it was described that when Siddham Brahman had offered that chipped rice in devotion to the Lord, back the Lord, he didn't even offer it, the Lord snatched it away from him. He was bringing it as an offering, but he had never even gotten to offer it. And the Lord even anticipated it, the offering, even before it was given, and took it away. And the small quantity of chipped rice that was obtained by going out and begging for it. He begged for it, and then he brought it before the Lord, because he had nothing. He didn't even have adequate food in his home, so he had to go out and beg to bring that offering to the Lord. So when the Lord took one bite of that offering, and the Lord was going to take more, it's described how Rukmini Devi, the goddess of fortune, grabbed the Lord's hand and stopped him. No, don't take any more. It's not necessary. Because even one bite is sufficient for the whole universe to be satisfied. And she described that actually how she becomes bound, the goddess of fortune. She goes to that place wherever the devotee offers something to the Lord with love and devotion. And therefore she feels obliged to go to that devotee and to give him some opulence. Prabhupada explains in the Krishna book that is the nature when the devotee worships the Lord with love and devotion and offers something to the Lord. Then the goddess of fortune, feeling so obliged, she comes to that home and she gives opulence to the devotee. Of course, always the criteria that we have to understand is not that necessarily a fact that every offering that is made is accepted by the Lord and every offering is made with love and devotion. But we understand that the stipulation always must be there, that if it's offered with love and devotion, then certainly Krishna is pleased and the goddess of fortune is pleased, and therefore opulence will come because of the devotee's constant meditation upon the Lord. Just like this, the example of Shiva's Pandit, where Shiva's Pandit, when Lord Chaitanya was at the house of Shiva's Pandit, Lord Chaitanya asked Shiva's Pandit about his livelihood. He thought he was close to Shiva's Pandit and asked him. He said, Shiva's Pandit, he said, how is it that you are actually maintaining your family? What is your livelihood? He said, I see that you don't go anywhere. You're always just in one place. How are you maintaining your family now? And how will you maintain your family in the future if you don't do anything? And Srivas Pandit explained that actually I don't feel a need to do anything to go or to make any effort. He said, Lord Chaitanya told Srivas Pandit, but you have a very big family. If you don't do anything, then how are you going to serve their needs? And Srivas Pandit told him, he said, actually, whatever is destined to come will come. Why do I have to make any effort for it? So then Lord Chaitanya told Srivas Pandit, he said that, Srivas, you should take sannyas. And when Srivas Pandit heard this, he says, it's not within my power to accept the renounced order of life. And he said, Chaitanya said, well, if you won't take sannyas, and if you're not going out and begging alms, then what will you do? You have to do something. If you're not doing either, how are you going to take care of this large family of yours? What will happen in the future? Specifically, how much you kind of suggest you take sannyas. If you're not going to fulfill your obligations, then just take sannyas. No, it's not within my power. He says. So then, and then Srivas Pandit explained, and he says, this is my answer to your question. And he clapped his hands three times. And Lord Chaitanya said, well, why don't you tell me the meaning behind this three claps? What do you mean? How is that an answer? He said, this is my answer. And he explained that he said after three times, if the food does not come to my home, then I will fast completely. After three times, if food does not come to my home, I will fast. And if after three times that is required to eat, food doesn't come to my home, he says, then I'll simply take a jug of water, I'll tie it around my neck, and I'll drown myself in the Ganga. And then Lord Chaitanya heard this. He said, my dear Srivas, he roared loudly. He said, you will never fast. It's not, he said, because of your devotion to me, because a devotee who is always meditating upon me, he says, I will personally. He says, even if the goddess of fortune becomes impoverished and she has to go out and beg, he said, I will personally come, and there'll never be any poverty in your home whatsoever, because I'll carry everything to your home on my head and give you opulence. Therefore you'll never fast. The Lord was actually telling Srivas Pandit, he said, because of your meditation, your constant meditation upon me, your constant devotion to me. And he explained to him, he said, don't you remember what I said in Bhagavad Gita? Ananyas chintayan somam yejana payupasante desham nitya bhayukkanam yogakshema vahamyaha. He says, those devotees who are always meditating upon me, he says, I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. I bring them opulence. I carry it on my head and give it to them. So he said this to Srivas Pandit. He said, therefore, a devotee of this caliber, for him, piety, wealth, liberation, all these things, they'll be immediately available to him. So Srivas Pandit, of course, he exemplified, typified the caliber of a devotee whose meditation is so fixed upon the lotus feet of the Lord that the Lord will certainly see, and that the devotee has everything that he needs. All opulence is available, and therefore the devotee will accept that opulence if the Lord provides it. But the devotee is not approaching the Lord asking him for that opulence. That is, somebody, of course, like Srivas Pandit, he wasn't even doing anything. He was making no effort whatsoever even to provide the necessities for his family. Of course, we know that such a advanced platform certainly cannot be imitated. But the point is that the devotee must do whatever is required to please the Lord. And therefore, a devotee, just as is described, all occupational engagements are ultimately meant for liberation, and they should never be performed for material gain. When a devotee performs his duty, he's not doing it for the purpose of material gain. He's doing it to satisfy the Supreme Lord. And therefore, by the worship of the Lord, through the execution of his duty, if the Lord provides opulence, then the devotee will accept that opulence. But he never worships the Lord for the opulence. He worships the Lord to please him, and he engages in his duties to satisfy the Lord. And therefore, such a devotee, if he may be particularly indifferent to opulence, whether it comes or it doesn't come, the Lord may give it to him. Therefore, there are certain examples of devotees who have material opulence, and therefore we should never think, we must be very, very careful to think that if a devotee has opulence, automatically he's materialistic. And of course, then there's an example of Pundarik Vidyanidhi. Pundarik Vidyanidhi was such an exalted devotee of the Lord. The Lord was so pleased with Pundarik Vidyanidhi that he would call him Father Pundarik. and he would express constantly how dear Pundarik Vidyanidhi was to him. And one day he began speaking about Father Pundarik, calling out his name, and all the devotees were wondering, who is this Pundarik Vidyanidhi that Lord Chaitanya is speaking about? And Lord Chaitanya began to describe how this Pundarik Vidyanidhi, he will soon come here and you'll see who Pundarik Vidyanidhi is. You'll see how deep the depth of the devotion that is there within his heart is, so deep that devotees like Pundarik Vidyanidhi, that I'm always captivated within their hearts. I'm always thinking about them, because the most exalted devotees. So the devotees were wondering, who is this Pundarik Vidyanidhi? And Pundarik Vidyanidhi, he was known, he was born in the village of Chattigram. And I believe that Mukunda was a resident of that village. Mukunda and one other devotee, they knew Pundarik Vidyanidhi well. But specifically Mukunda, he knew Pundarik Vidyanidhi's love for the Supreme Lord. And one day, he was going to see Pundarik Vidyanidhi, and he brought with him Gadadhar Pandit. Now Gadadhar Pandit, he was a new renunciation his whole life. For Gadadhar Pandit, material opulence was something. For him, it was, he's the caliber of that devotee who was, forget it, rejection, inimical. No question, material opulence. I do not want it. And the Lord, of course, the Lord is very much inclined. The devotee is so inimical, then certainly he will not force the devotee to accept it. But, therefore, when Mukunda brought Gadadhar Pandit to see Pundarik Vidyanidhi, when the two of them saw Pundarik Vidyanidhi, they introduced, Mukunda introduced Gadadhar Pandit to Pundarik Vidyanidhi, and he saw that he was dressed in very, very opulent clothing. He wore expensive jewelry, had all kinds of expensive oils in his body. He was seated on a throne with three canopies over the throne. He was surrounded by all kinds of opulent articles with different brass plates and so many different types of brass items. When Gadadhar Pandit saw Pundarik Vidyanidhi like this, he was thinking that, I've heard so much about Pundarik Vidyanidhi, such an elevated Vaishnava, and he came with such strong faith. But when he saw his opulence, he was thinking, all my faith he looks like a materialist to me. In his mind, he was thinking like that. And Mukunda could understand what was going on in the mind of Gadadhar Pandit, thinking in this way. So Mukunda decided to show Gadadhar Pandit that, oh, you're thinking in this way, but let me show you something otherwise. So Mukunda, from some place in the distance, I think, or nearby, he began reciting verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 10th canto, describing the glories of devotional service. I think he was describing some verses in glorification of Putana's position. How powerful is devotional service to the Lord, that even though Putana came with an inimical attitude towards the Lord, still, because she was offering her breast milk to the Lord accepted that offering as devotional service to him, and how she achieved such an exalted position because of the offering that was given to the Lord. And when he began describing this verse, and Pundarik Vidyanidhi heard the glories of devotional service, then Pundarik Vidyanidhi began manifesting very ecstatic symptoms of love for the Supreme Lord. He described his body, throw his body on the ground, and he began kicking everything, all the opulence that was around him. He began kicking the throne, kicking the canopies. He was kicking all the brass plates over. He was destroying everything in the house and because of these ecstatic symptoms. And when everybody was watching him, that was standing there, they thought for sure that the next time he falls, and every single bone in his body was going to break. But he was calling out as he was saying, Krishna, Krishna, continue. He says, say it, say it, please say more. And he was showing how much that he had such an attachment for hearing the glories of the Lord, and that He became completely oblivious to his atmanas, oblivious to external surroundings, and actually he fell into a complete deep trance. For 6 hours, he was lying there in total trance after creating all this destruction. And then, when Gadadhar Pandit saw that, he was saying, "Oops, mistake." I have offended such an exalted devotee. Now, of course, such ecstatic symptoms of the Lord, they have to be properly manifested. One should not think that simply because one begins kicking things and destroying things, that automatically he's on such an exalted platform. Just like there's that story, and also about Haridas Thakur, how Haridas Thakur once came before the snake charmer. And when the snake charmer began describing the glories of Kaliya, and Haridas Thakur heard the pastime of the Kaliya serpent, he began manifesting ecstatic symptoms, falling on the ground, kicking, and he went into complete ecstasy. And while he was doing this, the snake charmer, he stood back and let Haridas Thakur continue until Haridas Thakur came into external consciousness. Then finally Haridas Thakur did come back into external consciousness. He realized what had happened, that he had just fallen into ecstatic symptoms, and he became completely embarrassed at what had happened. And he just kind of stealthily left that place. So there was one Brahmana, so-called Brahmana nearby, who was thinking that Haridas Thakur, he got so much attention when he began manifesting his ecstatic symptoms. So he was thinking that Haridas Thakur, he's born in a family of Muslims. You know, what is his qualification? I'm born in a family of Brahmins. I'm Brahmin. So this Brahmin, he started thinking, why don't I do it too? So the Brahmin, he started manifesting all these ecstatic symptoms, through his so-called ecstatic symptoms. He threw his body on the ground, began trembling, rolling over, kicking. But when the snake charmer, this time, he didn't do the same thing that he did with Haridas Thakur, because when the snake charmer saw this Brahmin, he went over with a stick and began beating him, striking his body. And the so-called Brahmin, when he was being beaten by the snake charmer, he began crying out in anguish, total pain he was feeling. He got up and he started running away. Where is your ecstasy? Where is your ecstasy now? As the snake charmer was beating him. So everyone who was standing around, they were wondering, what is it? Why did he do this? And he said, Haridas Thakur was manifesting, and you just let him continue, but why did you beat this Brahmana? And then, of course, the snake charmer began to explain. He said, Haridas Thakur, because he's on that platform. He wasn't completely pretentious. He wasn't pretentious in any way. He manifested these ecstatic symptoms. And it was obvious that he had deep love for the Supreme Lord. But this Brahmana, he was simply a cheater, and one could easily see through it that he was completely motivated out of his envy for Haridas Thakur. And then he began describing the glories of Haridas Thakur. So obviously, one cannot manifest such ecstatic symptoms of the Lord and not be actually on that platform and expect that it's going to be accepted by everyone. Those who actually can distinguish between what is real love and what is simply some imitation for some material name and fame, they will not tolerate such manifestation of ecstatic symptoms. But when Pundarik Vidyaniti manifested such ecstatic symptoms, it was obvious to all, to both Mukunda and to Gadadhar Pandit, that such manifestations of love for the Supreme Lord, this external display, were really genuine symptoms of deep love for the Lord. And therefore, Gadadhar Pandit realized, he thought within himself, that I committed a great offense to Pundarik Vidyaniti. I was judging him by the external symptoms of seeing his material opulence, and he's thinking the only way I could possibly be relieved of this offense is I should actually offer myself completely to him as a disciple and actually take mantra, diksha, take initiation from him. So Mukunda, he introduced Gadadhar Pandit to Pundarik Vidyaniti after Pundarik Vidyaniti came back into external consciousness. And he said, I would like to introduce you to Gadadhar Pandit. He is the son of Madhava Misha. He's a very renounced devotee. He's lived renounced throughout his whole life, has devotion to the Supreme Lord, and he wants to become your disciple. And when Pundarik heard the intentions of Gadadhar Pandit, he agreed. He said, if you come at a particular time, some Akadasi, I guess, or some Shukla Akadasi, I think it was, if you come at this time, he said, then I will accept you as my disciple. And Pundarik was immediately therefore accepted Gadadhar Pandit as his disciple. He described it, that how actually he considered to be so fortunate to have such a disciple as Gadadhar Pandit, who was so fully qualified. So Pundarik Vidyanidhi, of course, was a very dear devotee of the Lord. And the external display of his opulences was not in any way an indication of his consciousness. In fact, he was so dear to the Lord that when Pundarik Vidyanidhi went to see the Lord, when the Lord saw Pundarik Vidyanidhi, immediately he began glorifying Pundarik Vidyanidhi. And Lord Chaitanya embraced Pundarik Vidyanidhi. And he embraced him. And it's described how when he embraced Pundarik Vidyanidhi, it appeared that his body completely entered into the body of Pundarik Vidyanidhi. And he fell into, Lord Chaitanya went into complete ecstasy, into a trance, and for 3 hours he stood in complete embrace of Pundarik Vidyanidhi. Well, he was experiencing such deep love and affection for his very confidential devotee. So here we see an example of somebody who externally appears to be very, very material opulent, but it is by no means an indicator by his opulence that he did not have love for the Lord. Therefore, it's described here that when a devotee becomes materially very opulent, one should not think that he's enjoying the results of his fruitive activities. It may be that the Lord actually is desiring for his devotee to live in opulence, just as in this particular pastime, in this section of the Bhagavatam, it is described that how Lord Nrisingadev is ordering Prahlad Maharaj to live in opulence. And therefore, in this verse it's described that it does not matter that you are in the material world. It does not matter if you live in opulence. None of these things are relevant. The Lord had a purpose he wanted to fulfill. He wanted Prahlad Maharaj to rule his father's kingdom. He wanted to accept this opulence, to live in this opulence. He said, being in the material world, it makes no difference whatsoever, even if you have to live in the material world and to live surrounded by opulence. He says, but simply continuously hear the instructions and messages given by me and always be absorbed in thought of me. Find the super soul existing in the core of everyone's heart. And as will be described in subsequent verses, that Lord Nrisingadev tells Prahlad that by living in the world in this way, that you will exhaust all the reactions of pious activity by feeling happiness. And because after the time factor, you will give up your body and you will return back home, back to Godhead. Therefore, a devotee does not endeavor for these opulences. A devotee, his only concern is simply to worship the Lord. Such devotees, such as the examples that we have given of Srivastava and Sudhama Brahman, who had no thought within his mind whatsoever to actually, he didn't want any opulence from the Lord. He didn't worship the Lord for some material opulence. He didn't pray to the Lord for opulence. He himself wanted none of these things. He simply satisfied, simply to glorify the Lord, to speak about the Lord, to hear about the Lord. These are the characteristics of such exalted devotees who never will approach the Lord for anything. There is never anything whatsoever are they interested for enjoying this material world. So such exalted devotees, they can go anywhere. They can remain in the material world even for thousands or even necessary millions of years. If that is the desire of the Lord, they can live in opulence. They can accept worldly responsibilities as the emperor of the whole universe, emperor of a planet. A devotee can accept these things because a devotee doesn't live in the material world if he's always continuously hearing and chanting and glorifying the Lord. He's not of this material world. That is always the protection that the devotee has. So that should be our primary motivation. Therefore, Prabhupada concludes this purport by saying, therefore, a devotee is never interested in karmakanda or jnanakanda, but is simply interested in favorable service to the Lord. Anukulyena Krishna Nishivam. Anukulyena means devotional service rendered favorably. Favorable devotional service means in a favorable way of mind. Favorable means that he's always thinking of the interests of the Lord. That is favorable devotional service. Where sometimes one may engage in some service or assist the Lord in a way which is not in a favorable way. It's like the example was given, it's just like sometimes one may be inimical to the Lord, but he's meditating on the Lord, but that's not favorable. Favorable devotional service means he's always thinking of the Lord favorably. He's always anxious to please and to satisfy the Lord. That is anukulyena, Krishnana Shivana. Devotee's not interested in karmakanda. His devotional service is rendered in this favorable way. And therefore, the devotee is prepared to accept whatever the Lord wishes to give him. If the Lord gives him, the devotee will simply use it. A devotee in this material world uses all material opulences for the service of the Lord because he is planning how to serve the Lord with these opulences advised by the Lord himself. Whatever material opulence is within his possession, he engages to expand the glories in the service of the Lord. That is how a devotee will use his opulences if it's given to him. He'll never use it for his own pleasure. He's never thinking, oh, look what the Lord has given to me for my own enjoyment. But he always thinks of how to accept whatever opulences is given to him, simply to glorify the Lord. So, that is understanding from this verse. So, some questions? Comments? Well, we know how Krishna handles it. Krishna says that my devotee worships me, engages in my devotional service, but at the same time wants the opulence of material enjoyment. He's like the fool who willingly gives up nectar to drink poison. Since I am very intelligent, why should I give him material prosperity? And Shadow House told him, this is to take shelter of my lotus feet and make him forget this worldly opulence. That's how Krishna deals with somebody who engages in his devotional service but still wants material opulence. Krishna deals with him in such a way that by giving the filling desire of the devotee, but fulfilling it in such a way that the devotee doesn't come back again. Of course, that's sometimes in the Lord's dealings with his devotee, that's how he deals. Although sometimes we may say that a devotee may get his opulence, lose it, and then he'll try to get it again. And he may achieve it again, and the Lord always will take it away. So finally the devotee realizes, why am I so much mad after this opulence? The Lord will do that for his devotee. For anyone who is once engaged in devotional service, the Lord will gradually bring his devotee to take shelter in his lotus feet. Mm. Because of his having once engaged in devotional service to the Lord. So of course, that's how the Lord deals with it. But how do we know? Well, we know that because although we may not sometimes understand what are our motives, we may think that our motives are pure, but they're actually very mixed. But the point is that one of the symptoms of a devotee is a devotee doesn't endeavor for these things. If a devotee endeavors for these things, endeavor for things which are very difficult to obtain, then we know that by that endeavor, this can be one of the causes of fall down or deity. The devotee accepts whatever the Lord gives because the devotee is always thinking of one thing only. First and foremost, he's thinking, is what does Krishna want him to do? So if a devotee's meditation is always fixed upon what is the desire of the Lord, what service does he want me to do, and he's always anxious to serve the Lord in this way. And then if the Lord gives him to him without endeavor, then the devotee will accept it. But a devotee never thinks that, oh, I can't do this, what is required for the Lord, unless I have this opulence first, or have this material facility first. This is the criteria for my ability to be able to execute the desire of the Lord. Therefore, because of this understanding, you know, we should try to make a distinction within ourselves as to thinking, what is first and foremost? First and foremost, is it, what is the Lord's desire? Does the Lord want me to preach Krishna consciousness? If the Lord wants me to preach Krishna consciousness, then whatever situation he puts me to preach, I should be prepared to accept that situation. If that's where the Lord puts me, then let me preach. But if one thinks, well, I can only preach if I have this certain type of facility, and these are the conditions, even though Krishna time and time and again is saying, no, here, this is where I want you to preach. This is where I want you to serve. And unless I can have, and the devotee's thinking, he's disturbed by these things, and he's thinking, yes, well, then there's some mixture that is there. I should be prepared to serve Krishna however he wants me to serve him. So if we keep on endeavoring for these things, then Krishna will show us. And that is the point. Just like it's the offense is one of the offenses of the Holy Name. To maintain material attachments, even after hearing so many instructions on this matter. A devotee sometimes, Krishna shows him one time, two times, many times, again and again. Why you keep on thinking that you can't serve me unless you have this, again, that. So if we keep on maintaining that material attachment, even after Krishna has shown us so many times, and this is also considered to be an offense, Krishna will show us. He'll help us. For a devotee is sincere, Krishna is helping that devotee, showing him, why are you keeping on endeavoring for these things? Just accept. Just accept the service. This is the service that you have to do for me. I mean, if you just accept that, and think of that first and foremost, then I'll give you whatever you need. Just meditate on me. Whatever you need, I'll give it to you. Prabhupada explains that point in so many places. I'll give it to you. So the devotee knows, well, if Krishna's given this to me, then I'll use it. But if Krishna doesn't give it to me, then I'll take it. So this is how a devotee has to be thinking. Just like the example that we just gave him. He wasn't even endeavoring to maintain his family. But because his devotion, his meditation was so fixed, completely fixed, his mind was so much absorbed in love for the Lord. The Lord is saying, poverty will never be there in your home. Never. You'll never see poverty. I'll bring it on my head and I'll carry everything you need. That's the difference between a devotee and one who's mixed. One who's mixed thinking, no, first I have to have this, then I can serve. That's fixed. So Krishna may try to show us again and again and again. Therefore Krishna says, if a devotee worships me and he wants the opulence of material enjoyment, okay, I may give it to him. He may give it. But after he gets it, you know, by my superior intelligence, hopefully he'll realize that what is the value of all this opulence? What is this Govinda Das's wealth, son, youth, wife, family? What is in this? This is a trap appears in a lotus leaf, such as this life. So once let me take up the worship of Sri Hari, the only necessity. Rather, the devotee may have to come to realize this. What is there in all this? So if the devotee continues to worship Krishna, by all means, then Krishna will help him to come to this realization. So help him. I have to make a phone call at 8:30. I'm already 5 minutes late. So, I'll go to Shikoka. The moment she was there, she was excited to be so much.